Members can take their seats as quickly and as quietly as possible. We shall move to questions without notice. Are there any questions without notice? Give the call to the honourable member for Wannan.
Thanks, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration. Why was Bob Hawke's former business partner and friend, who pleaded guilty to poisoning people, no laughing matter, Mr Abdul Hadi, an Austrian citizen, released from immigration detention on a bridging visa E rather than a bridging visa R, so he didn't have to wear an ankle bracelet or have a curfew placed on him?
Give the call to order. Members on my left, the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs has the call.
Thank you very much, Speaker. And I thank the Shadow Minister for his question. And of course, I remind him that the individual he refers to is not part of the NZYQ cohort. I say to him and to all members of the House that we continue to take every possible step to deport people who have no right to stay in this country. And this is a matter, of course, which is currently before the court. And I draw your attention, Shadow Minister, and all members, to the comments of the judge in the most recent hearing, in which they said, and I quote, "There appears to be a very fixed view on the part of the minister to be rid of this man." He's right.
Give the call to the honourable member for Jagga Jagga.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. How will Labor's new tax cuts for every Australian taxpayer benefit Australians and support aspiration?
Give the call to the Prime Minister.
I thank the member for Jagga Jagga for her question. And indeed, as a result of the decision last night, every Australian taxpayer, all 13.6 million of them, will get a tax cut. As a result of the figures that came out
member for Barker.
Recently, every across the board, we're also seeing real wages increase. And that's why the direct result of that is what we are aiming for. We want Australians to earn more, and we want Australians to keep more of what they earn. Those opposite want Australians to work longer for less. We know that that is the case. But we made sure that no one was left behind and no one held back. No one left behind by ensuring that those workers who earn under $45,000 a year also got a tax cut. And one of the things that that will do is flow right through the tax scales, so that Treasury has estimated that it will result in over 900,000 additional hours of work being worked each week, dealing with good economic policy to deal with the skills shortages which are there. But it also supports aspiration of all Australians. That's why we increased the 120,000 level up to 135, and that's why we increased as well the top marginal tax rate from 180,000 to 190,000. The first increase in the top marginal rate since 2008. And it contrasts with what they did when they were in government, which was without any notice at all to introduce a levy on those high income earners to increase their taxation rates rather than decrease them. Now, Australians will also, of course, are benefiting from other measures that we have. But whilst they voted for it last night over there in the Senate, every senator, they've continued to argue against it. Senator Hume said this morning that they were going to take to the election a tax package in keeping with the stage three tax cuts. We will have to go back to the drawing board, she said. So they're starting again. Rollback is back. First they said they would argue against
the
it.
Member
then
for
they were
Petrie.
Going to fight it. Then they were going to roll it back. Then they wanted an election on the basis of it. Then they voted against it. But they're still, then they voted for it. But having argued against it,
order.
They can change the way that they vote, but they can't change who they are.
The Prime Minister's time. Order. There's far too much noise on my left. I'm just going to have the House settle so I can hear from the member for Wannan.
Thanks, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration. Why was Mr Abdul Hadi released from detention if he wasn't part of the NZYQ cohort?
Give the call to the Order. I do not need sound effects before I call the minister. Give a call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the Shadow Minister for his question. As he should be well aware, and as I know the Leader of the Opposition is well aware, I can't comment on individual cases. But I say this... No.
Order. The Leader of the Opposition...
And I say again, we continue to take every possible step to deport people who have no right to stay in this country.
Order.
And
I say this,
Mr Speaker. Those opposite had 5 years to remove this individual and did nothing.
Give a call. Has the minister concluded his answer? Give a call to the honourable member for MacArthur.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Deputy Prime Minister. How will the Albanese Labor government's tax cuts deliver for our defence personnel and members of the Department of Defence, and how does this compare to other approaches?
Give a call to the Deputy Prime Minister and the Minister for Defence.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. And before I start, could I just acknowledge two-time Geelong Premiership captain Tom Harley, who is currently on loan to the Sydney Swans as their CEO, and acknowledge Sydney captains Callum Mills and Chloe Malloy. And can I thank the member for his question and acknowledge his long contribution as a leading paediatrician in southwest Sydney. Over decades, he has literally been responsible for the delivery of thousands of babies, and as a result of what happened in the Senate last night, the vast bulk of them will now receive a tax cut. As a result of what happened in the Senate last night, every member of the Australian Defence Force, every public servant in the Department of Defence, every person working in Australian defence industry will now receive a tax cut. From a civilian nurse working at Holsworthy Barracks near the members' electorate who receive a tax cut of almost $2,200, or an Air Force vehicle mechanic at RAF Base East Sale who receive a tax cut of $1,463, and for that person, that is twice the tax cut that they would have received under the tax plan of those opposite. Indeed, across the entirety of the ADF, 85% of personnel will be better off as a result of Labor's tax plans. In terms of the Department of Defence, 95% of public servants will receive a bigger tax cut under our plan compared to what was offered by those opposite. And when you consider that last year, members of the Defence Force received their largest pay increase in more than a decade, in combination for women and men serving in our Defence Force now, they are more than $5,000 better off. Now, those opposite have completely given up on helping Australians with the cost of living. They literally come in here and will talk about anything else, or come in and just make stuff up. But what they will not do is come to this place with a plan to improve the lives of Australians, because they no longer have a tax policy. Indeed, the Shadow Finance Minister this morning said that they would need to go back to the drawing board. Can I suggest that she give the Shadow Minister for Defence a call, because I'm sure that he can lend her an overhead projector. What we are left with over there is a Liberal tax shambles. This government is committed to making a practical difference, to fighting on behalf of working Australians and to fighting on behalf of the men and women of the Australian Defence Force.
Before I call the honourable member for Fowler, just a couple of quick acknowledgements. I'm pleased to inform the House that I'd like to welcome Geoscience Australia graduates joining us in the gallery at the invitation of the Minister for Resources in Northern Australia. These graduates have just completed the 2023 graduate program at Geoscience Australia. I'd like to inform the House that we're joined in the gallery today by Dr. Harsha De Silva, a Member of Parliament for the Colombo District of Sri Lanka. Give the call to the honourable member for Fowler.
Thank you, Speaker. Prime Minister, you're no doubt aware that working-class Australians are feeling the pains of rental costs, housing affordability and soaring costs in essentials such as food, electricity, gas, insurance, petrol, to name a few. When will your government act to freeze the compounding HEX indexation to alleviate debt pressures for our best and brightest young people, especially those from low socioeconomic background and in my Fowler community in Western Sydney?
give the call to the Prime Minister.
Thanks very much, Mr Speaker, and I'll begin and then ask the Minister for Education to comment, given the release just this week of the comprehensive plan that he has received on higher education. But I say this about the member for Fowler's electorate. They were big winners last night. Big winners last night, because it does have a large cohort of low socioeconomic recipients, income levels, and they will benefit substantially by
order.
The fact.
The manager of opposition business will cease interjecting.
By the fact.
I like to be very fair and reasonable, but if I've just called someone up for interjecting and the House is silent, it's a bit rich for the Deputy Leader to then interject. I'm just going to ask her to cease interjecting for the remainder of this answer. The Prime Minister has the call.
Thanks, Mr Speaker. Out of respect for the member for Fowler and her question, it is important to recognise that as a result of that decrease in that first rate from 19 cents to 16 cents, a whole lot of her electorate who were going to get not a single dollar will now get a tax cut. As a direct result as well, that of our tax cut plan passed in the Senate, average workers, people like the teachers and nurses, community workers, people in aged care, childcare, police officers, will all get double the tax cut that they were going to get previously. As a direct result of the government's intervention as well, aged care workers, many of whom live in the member for Fowler's electorate, have received a 15% wage increase. What that has done is feed into the increase that we have seen throughout 2023 of delivering a real wage increase. Now,
the member for Hume. The Prime Minister is talking about the issues the member for Fowler asked in her question regarding cost of living increases in housing and food. The Prime Minister has completed his answer. Order. Order. We'll give the call to the honourable member. Order. Members on my left, we're going to hear the questions in silence and hopefully the answers in silence as well. We're going to give the call to the member for Wills.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Skills and Training. How is the Albanese Labor government's fee-free TAFE and cost-of-living tax cuts helping people to skill up into better-paid, secure jobs while keeping more of what they earn?
Give the call to the Minister for Skills and Training.
Well, thank you, Speaker. Can I thank the member for Wills for his very strong and long advocacy for the vet sector and his electorate and beyond across this nation. Speaker, the government inherited the worst skills shortage in this nation in 50 years. In 50 years.
Order.
Whatever occupation, whatever profession, whatever trade, we have a significant challenge to supply the skills to our labour market, to our economy. It's why we convened the Jobs and Skills Summit. It's why we have made TAFE courses in skill shortage areas fee-free, and that's enabled us to supply skills to areas of the economy, the care economy, the energy sector, the IT sector, the traditional trades, many, many other parts of our economy. And I'm happy to inform the House that we've well and truly smashed our original target of 180,000 fee-free TAFE places for 2023, enabling 350,000 Australians to enrol in courses that will improve their employment prospects in this country. And of course, there's an additional 300,000 places available for Australians to enrol this year. Now, Speaker, as well as removing cost barriers to much needed education and training, the Albanese government, with the passing of legislation last night, have ensured that all 13.6 million taxpayers will receive a tax cut from the 1st of July, and a staggeringly 84% will receive a bigger tax cut than they would have under the Liberal plan. Speaker, so by way of example, to appreciate policies working in tandem, a student training to be a nurse in Victoria will not have to find $15,000 to enrol in that course, so that they can enrol in a course that is very much in demand in our labour market. It will ensure that that person qualified will, of course, in the event of becoming a nurse, on, for example, $75,000 per annum, will receive double that what they would have received under the Liberals' plan. The combination of these policies are providing opportunities for people, one, to acquire skills and knowledge in areas of demand in our labour market, and two, making sure that we provide opportunities for people, but also not only do they earn more, but they keep more of what they earn. Speaker, with real wages growing, and I want to pay tribute to the Minister for Employment for the work that he's done in this area in particular, and with tax cuts now enshrined in law, we are seeing working families in Dunkley and across the nation, across the country, earn more and keep more of what they earn. Speaker, by way of contrast, if it was left to those opposite, there wouldn't be fee-free TAFE, there wouldn't be cheaper medicines, there wouldn't be cheaper childcare, and there wouldn't be tax cuts for all Australians.
Give the call to the honourable member for Wannan.
Thanks, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration. What circumstances would cause the minister to release from immigration detention into the community an Austrian citizen who pleaded guilty to poisoning people?
That's okay. We'll hear. We'll find a way through this. Don't worry. Order. Order. We'll get there. I'll hear from the Leader of the House.
Mr. Speaker, that entire question was framed as a hypothetical. There's an explicit ruling against questions being hypothetical, and that question was nothing but.
Standing Order 100, Part D, Section 7, does indicate that question should be ruled out of order. With hypothetical matter. So I'm going to ask the member just to rephrase that question slightly to make sure that it is within the standing order. So that's not just repeating the same question with one word changed. It's just making it sure that it's directly responsible for a decision that the minister has responsibility for, not an expression, opinion or a hypothetical situation. The member for Wannan has the call.
My question is to the Minister for Immigration. In a previous answer, he's referred to releasing an Austrian who had pleaded guilty to poisoning people from detention. Now, under what circumstances would the minister release such a person out of detention?
The question is in order. Just. And I'll give the call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs. And he may
Thank
refer
you.
To his previous
Thank
answer.
Thank you, Speaker. I have already answered this question in respect to the first one. And let me be very
Order.
Clear. I don't accept the characterisation that was just put to the chamber. I say this.
Order.
I say
the leader,
this.
The Leader of the Opposition,
we,
I want to hear the Minister's question.
We
answer.
Continue to take every possible step to deport people who have no right to stay in the country. And this is a matter which is currently before the court.
Has the minister concluded his answer? We'll order. The member for Lingiari will cease interjecting. Give the call to the honourable member for Tangney.
Yes,
thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Housing and Homelessness. How will Help to Buy support tens of thousands of Australians into home ownership? And what is standing in the way of this support? Thank you.
Give a call to the Minister for Housing, the Minister for Homelessness and the Minister for Small Business.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. And I do want to thank the member for Tangi for that question, our great member for Tangi. He, of course, is from the great state of Western Australia. Now, Western Australia, of course, has a successful bipartisan shared equity scheme that's been running for more than 20 years. That is at capacity, Mr. Speaker. That
Order.
Is at capacity.
Member for O'Connor.
And our Help to Buy shared equity program will reduce the cost of a mortgage by up to 40% for
member
low
for
and middle income
will
earners.
Cease rejecting.
Eligible participants will only need a 2% deposit, Mr. Speaker, and the government will then support them with an equity stake of up to 40% for new homes.
The minister will pause. The member for O'Connor and the member for Deakin and a few others always continually interject when this minister is speaking, and a range of other ministers, but I'm not going to put up with these continual interjections and disrespect, particularly to this minister as well. So we're just going to hear what the minister has to say and limit the interjections, because I want to hear what she's got to say. The minister has the call.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I was saying, the government will support them with an equity stake of up to 40% for new homes and 30% for existing homes. Help to Buy will be real support that will help lifelong renters become homeowners, Mr. Speaker. Renters like Sandra from Melbourne. Sandra told me that she and her husband have, and I quote, never been able to save enough deposit to buy a home of our own and have always lived in rental accommodation. She continued, we would do anything to have a secure home in which to live. When we talk about Help to Buy, Mr. Speaker, we're talking about it being life-changing for people like Sandra. It's highly targeted to help people without driving up property prices. And it has the backing of experts, Mr. Speaker, like the Grattan Institute, who has said, and I quote, the proposed Help to Buy scheme would help level the playing field for first home buyers. And then, of course, the Australian Council of Social Services, who also supports Help to Buy, who said, and I quote, it will help balance the scales for some between those who have access to the bank of mum and dad for their deposit and those that don't, Mr. Speaker. Then, of course, the master builders, who also back the Help to Buy scheme and our broad housing agenda, Mr. Speaker, and they've described it as, and I quote, sensible housing policies that benefit both aspiring homeowners and encourage more housing supply, Mr. Speaker. But apparently those opposite and their new friends in the Greens think that they know better than some of the experts, Mr. Speaker, because the Liberals and the Greens
order. The minister
are standing
will pause.
In the way.
The minister will pause. The Minister for Social Services, the Minister for Infrastructure, will also cease interjecting while the minister is speaking. This back and forth across the chamber is not helpful for the chamber. The minister has the call.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This life-changing support, this will help 40,000 Australians into home ownership that they are standing against, Mr. Speaker. They're supposed to support Australians into home ownership, yet they don't when given the opportunity in this place. By voting against Help to Buy, they'll be denying those tens of thousands of Australians the great Australian dream of home ownership, Mr. Speaker. They need to stop standing in the way, and they need to change their position on this vital legislation. It's an election commitment that we took to the Australian people, and they should be supporting Australians into home ownership.
Yeah. Give a call to the honourable member for Hume.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Climate Change and Energy. Last year, the minister showed off Australia's first EV ute, the LEV ET60. The managing director of Drive.com describes the ET60 as having an effective range of only 150 kilometres for traders. Doesn't work for people in rural areas, on the urban fringe, people who tow or people who live on farms. Can the minister confirm the ET60's price tag of $92,000 is nearly double the price of the diesel alternative?
Order. Members on my left. The minister for order on my right as well. The member for Swan is warned. Do not interject while a minister is approaching the dispatch box. The Minister for Climate Change and Energy has the call.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I thank the member for Hume for his question. I note that a constituent of his living in Goulburn will travel 18,705 kilometres each year, and as a result,
order.
And as a result, an average.
Order. Order.
And
order.
As a result, would say.
The minister will pause. The minister will pause. Well, the minister might start again because I can't hear a word he's saying. Look, I can appreciate. Order. The member for Hume has asked his question. We're just going to ask the member for Fairfax to steady it. And I'm going to ask the minister to continue.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The member for Hume doesn't appear interested in the potential fuel savings of people who travel long distances in his electorate, Mr. Speaker, because on average they travel 18,705 kilometres a year, which would save somebody
buying a new car in 2028, $1,487 in his electorate. In his electorate.
Order.
And he doesn't appear to care, Mr Speaker. This was a point made by the member for Bradfield not that long ago. Now, Mr Speaker, one of the reasons I appreciate this line of questioning so much is that it underlines the negativity of this Leader of the Opposition. All he's got is scare campaigns, all he's got is negativity. The member for Cook may have left the building, but he left his anti-weekend scare campaigns behind for the Leader of the Opposition. Just a few weeks before the last election, the then Treasurer of Australia was asked about fuel efficiency standards, the then member for Kooyong, and he said this. He said this. We've always been committed to getting fuel efficiency standards in place. That was the former member for Kooyong. I'd hate to see it if they were opposed, Mr Speaker. They've had a funny way of showing it over the last week or so, Mr Speaker. This is an opposition so negative, as I've said before, that they oppose our policies.
Order,
they oppose the policies
member for
promoted
Fairfax.
By the former member for Kooyong and the member for Bradfield. Now, I'm not sure if I've mentioned before the member for Bradfield this week, but I can't recall. But to be fair to the member for Bradfield, he did propose fuel efficiency standards, but they were a little different to the ones preferred by the Minister for Transport and I that we are consulting on at the moment. To be fair to him, they were much more aggressive than our standards, much more ambitious. The member for Bradfield had not one, but three options that he consulted on. All of them for 2025 had more efficient vehicles on average than
the Nationals
the Minister for Transport and I are proposing. I'm trying to do the member for Bradfield a favour with his teal Challenger, showing that he's actually in favour of fuel efficiency standards. He just couldn't get it through. He could have got it through the parliament with the Labor Party support, which we had provided. He just couldn't get it through his party room because of the climate change denying right wing, Mr Speaker, who vetoed the member for Bradfield, vetoed the then member for Kooyong, and they are still running the Liberal Party today.
Give the call. Order. We'll hear from the member for Corwell.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the minister representing the Minister for Women. How is the Albanese Labor government's focus on women and gender equality helping women earn more and keep more of what they earn? How has this been received?
Give the call to the minister representing the Minister for Women.
Thank you very much, Mr Speaker. And can I thank my friend, the member for Corwell, for the question? We came into the parliament together, and I know she and I are so incredibly proud of the work that this government is doing for gender equality. We are deeply focused on delivering for women on this side of the House. As the first federal government to be majority women, gender equality runs deep in our veins. It's why our tax cut plan will see tax cuts for every single woman who pays tax in this country. Our plan, in fact, will see a bigger tax cut for 90% of Australian women taxpayers who will receive an additional average tax cut of $707. That is 5.8 million Australian women. Women work hard across every aspect of our economy, and we want to ensure that they are able to keep more of that hard-earned money to meet the daily challenges and cost of living pressures they face. On average, a woman working full-time in Australia now earns $135 a week more than when we came to office. That is a substantial increase, that does not happen by accident. And this wage growth means women are earning more, and our tax reforms, of course, mean that they get to keep more of what they earn. ABS data reported last week shows that the gender pay gap has dropped to a record low. It shows that Labor's efforts to support women's economic equality are working in a very real and a very tangible way that is making a difference to Australian women across this country. And yesterday, we of course saw the results of the Workplace Gender Equality Agency publishing gender pay gaps for nearly 5,000 Australian private sector employers for the first time. We're acting to make sure to make these changes because economic equality is a core principle of what we do. It's why we've reformed the industrial relations system to improve how it works for women. Reforms that those opposite opposed. Reforms to fix the bargaining system, to get wages moving, particularly in those industries which are largely see women employed in them. We know that reforms to change the law to put gender equity at the heart of the Fair Work Commission decision-making are making a substantial difference. Reforms that are making a difference to the lives of women right the way across the country. They don't happen by accident. It is a deliberate design feature of everything that we do to make sure women are able to earn more and get to keep more of that hard-earned money.
Yeah. Give a call to the honourable member for Hume.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the Minister for Climate Change and Energy. I refer to the Minister's last answer. Can the Minister confirm that the ute owner would need to own the vehicle for 33 years to break even?
Order. The Minister. Order. Members on my left. Order. The Leader of the Opposition. When the House comes to order, the Minister for Climate Change and Energy has the call.
Mr. Speaker, I think we should probably be grateful that the opposition now realises that such a thing as electric ute exists, given the Deputy Leader of the Opposition was a ute denier not that long ago. A ute denier. Deputy Leader of the Opposition said there's no such thing as electric ute not that long ago. Now they're saying they're expensive. Now, yes, Mr. Speaker, it is the case that different models have different costs. Mr. Speaker, of course that is the case. But it is also the case that rigorous analysis of our policies released in the impact statement by the Minister for Transport and I, released by the Minister for Transport and I, showed $140 billion in benefits to all Australians out to 2050, $12 billion in fuel savings for motorists by 2030, $108 billion in fuel savings by 2050.
Order. The Minister will just pause. The member for Hume on a point of order.
Relevance, Mr. Speaker. It was a very specific question about the payback on the ute that the minister has been showcasing, Mr. Speaker, that can only go 150 kilometres.
The minister has had a little while, but I'm going to ask him to get to the question. He can refer to his previous answer because that was in the question, but he needs to refine his remarks. It was quite a tight question, and he has the call.
Mr. Speaker, and the member asked about costs and benefits of different models of cars, and I'm more than happy to engage. I know they don't love electric vehicles. We believe in choice for Australians, Mr. Speaker, to buy either an electric vehicle or a hybrid or a more fuel-efficient diesel or petrol car, which is available in the rest of the world, but not in Australia and not in Russia. Mr. Speaker, not in Australia, not in Russia, because we're the only two major economies without fuel efficiency standards. The Leader of the Opposition says he wants to be with Russia. Well, so be it. So be it if you want to be with Russia, if that's your approach, Mr. Speaker. That's his big plan for Australia, to stay back in the past, not to have efficiency standards, not to give Australia's choice of electric vehicles, diesel vehicles that are more efficient, petrol vehicles that are more efficient, or hybrids. That's why we are proposing a policy under which an average new car buyer in 2028 will cut their annual fuel costs by around $1,000. And as the member for Bradfield, the member for Bradfield so eloquently put it, in that op-ed in The Australian, jointly with the then member for Kooyong, he wrote that people in regional and rural areas will be the big winners from fuel efficiency standards. He put it so well, Mr. Speaker. He put it so well. And maybe that's why the RACQ, the Peak Body for Motorists in Queensland, which represents the interests of motorists in Queensland, wrote a well-designed standard. They're very sensitive over there, Mr. Speaker. A well-designed standard that boosts efficient and safer vehicle supply will ultimately deliver a lower total cost of ownership for motorists.
Order. There was far too much noise during that answer. Just remind all ministers to stick to the standing orders. Order. I'd like to hear from the member for Macquarie.
Thank you, Speaker. My question's to the Prime Minister. How will Labor's new tax cuts benefit women? And is there any opposition to the government's work to put economic opportunity for women at the very heart of our agenda?
The call to the Prime Minister.
I thank the member for Macquarie for her question. And of course, as a result of the decision by the Senate last night, the government will deliver a tax cut for every Australian taxpayer, all 13.6 million of them. But 84% of taxpayers will get a bigger tax cut than they would have under the Liberal scheme. But importantly, 90% of women will be better off under this proposal. 90%. Indeed, 98% of young people will be better off as well. We are making sure that women are earning more and keeping more of what they earn. On average, a woman working full-time in Australia now earns $135 a week more than when we came to office, and they will get a tax cut of some $2,000 a year. Women's workforce participation is at a record high, and this has been helped by changes such as cheaper childcare, expanding paid parental leave, flexible working arrangements, because we know that when women Order. With children are making decisions about how many hours they work, an increase in their take-home pay is a powerful incentive. We've introduced, of course, aged care workers getting a 15% pay rise, the vast majority of whom are women. And the gender pay gap is at a record low. We are requiring companies to publish their gender pay gap because transparency and accountability is how we can close the pay gap. I commented yesterday about Senator Canavan's statements, but last night he doubled down. He went on as part of a panel of four men discussing the gender pay gap in Paul Murray's man cave. I kid you not. He said this: "It's a whole hill of nonsense. It is a completely useless report. There is just no real evidence here for a large gender pay gap in Western countries." Not only do they want to do nothing about it, they want to pretend it doesn't even exist. And if you don't identify where there are problems with policy, no wonder you don't come up with any solutions. But Senator Canavan has been out there now for day after day, and I give the Deputy Leader of the Liberal Party credit, because the Deputy Leader of the Liberal Party has distanced herself from Senator Canavan's comments. But you know who we've heard crickets from? This bloke here. The Leader of the Opposition has had nothing to say about Senator Canavan, not a single word. So he'll allow him to go out there, press those buttons, get in that man Order. Cave, but Prime has Minister's nothing to say to distance himself from those concluded. Comments.
Give the call to the honourable member for Brisbane.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Resources. Right now, our country is burning in fires fuelled by coal and gas, threatening lives and communities. So as the climate crisis gets worse, why is Labor trying to fast-track massive new gas projects with a bill that overrides environment laws? And why is one of Labor's first acts since the Voice referendum a bill that weakens First Nations power to oppose massive new climate bombs on their land and sea country?
Order. Give the call to the Minister for Resources and the Minister for Northern Australia.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the question to the member. Contrary to what you have just said, which is not true, the bill does not give me any. Oh, sorry, pardon me. The member, what the member has said is not true. The bill before the House does not provide me powers to override any approvals whatsoever. It includes a technical amendment allowing the government to adopt future recommendations of an offshore environmental management review. It should come as no surprise to anyone in this House, including the Greens political party or in the other place, that if a government undertakes a review that we might seek, a government might seek to indeed implement some recommendations of that review. No surprises there. So this is what this bill enables, us to work and implement recommendations of the review, a review which is being undertaken as we speak. Now, it might come as a surprise to the member to know that the Greens currently did put forward a bill to try and do something similar, but not the same, but they're not the party, any party of government, and they would have to make exactly the same changes to the existing offshore regulations to implement what they want to implement. So in that respect, you'd be in the same boat as the government is, or in any future government would be, to do any such changes to those regulations. So It might be worth having a bit of a look at that and getting some more knowledge in your own mind for your own sense of understanding of what the offshore regulations indeed are. Thank you.
Order. Before I call the member for Lingiari. Order. Before I call anyone, I'm going to do an acknowledgement that I've been requested to do by the member for Gippsland. So joining us in the gallery today are members of the Gippsland Youth Spaces program who are in Canberra today meeting with government and opposition members as part of a bushfire recovery program. A warm welcome to you all. Give the call to the honourable member for Pearce.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Early Childhood Education. How is the Albanese Labor government helping people to earn more and keep more of what they earn in feminised industries such as early childhood education and care?
Give the call to the Minister for Early Childhood and Youth.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for Pearce, best member for Pearce in this place since I've been here, that's for sure. She's my very dear friend, and I thank her very much for her question. The 86,000 taxpayers in Pearce know that they have a truly strong voice for them here in Parliament, somebody who fought for them to get their tax cuts. And in Pearce, on average, Pearce residents will see an average of $1,618 back in their pockets because of Labor's tax cuts. And you know, Mr. Speaker, that includes the wonderful educators at places like Good Start Tapping and at the Lake Joondalup Early Learning Centre, which the member for Pearce and I have visited now several times up there in Wanneroo. Our tax cuts mean that those workers will keep more of their hard-earned money. An early childhood educator earning $46,000 a year will get an $829 tax cut. And the average early childhood education teacher will receive $1,404 in tax cuts, money back in their pockets under this Labor government. Now, Mr. Speaker, Eliza, who has a Certificate 3 and she's a qualified educator in Tasmania, she's just starting out in her career, and she told me the timing of these cuts is ideal. She went on to say that with rising costs, this additional money is going to have a real impact on her budget, and she says it just takes the pressure off. It just takes the pressure off. And no matter if the person I'm talking to is someone who's been in the industry for 40 years, like Caro in Western Australia, or if they're just starting out, like Eliza in Tasmania, they always tell me just how important these tax cuts are for them. They mean food on the table, they mean petrol in the car, they mean they can pay their car insurance, they mean real cost of living relief, real money back into the pockets of hard-working Australians in feminised sectors like early childhood education. In fact, Mr. Speaker, as the Prime Minister said earlier, 90% of women taxpayers will be better off under our tax plan. And we're getting wages moving again in low-paid, female-dominated industries. And I might add, those industries often employ high numbers of migrant and culturally and linguistically diverse women. That's why the gender pay gap is at the lowest it's ever been. We supported two increases in modern awards, benefiting early childhood education and carers. Now, when those opposite were last in government, keeping wages low was part of their architecture. There's no secret there. In contrast, we want Australians to earn more and keep more of their earnings, while those opposite want them to work harder for less.
Minister's time has concluded. Give the call to the honourable member for Nicholls.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Climate Change and Energy. Last year, the minister showed off Australia's first EV ute, the LDV ET60, a ute that would cost struggling tradies an extra $46,000. Is it true that the maximum range of this ute is 300 kilometres, the distance from Melbourne to Hamilton, but only if it's empty? Is it also true that if the back of the ute's fully loaded up, the maximum range drops to 150 kilometres, the distance from Melbourne to Bendigo, but not back to Melbourne?
Order. Order. Members on my left will cease interjecting. A member for O'Connor. The House is going to come to order before the Minister speaks. Order. Members on my right. The Minister has the call.
Well, thanks, Mr. Speaker. I really do appreciate that question.
mainly because, for all those watching at home, it reminds everyone it hasn't quite reached the National Party that it's 2024, Mr. Speaker. And there are options available around the world.
Order.
For electric order. Cars.
Order. The minister will
electric
pause.
Cars.
The minister will pause. The minister will pause. The minister will pause. That's far too much noise. The yelling's going to stop. Interjecting is one thing, but simply yelling and screaming, that's not what question time's about. But the deputy leader of the opposition, this is deja vu. I don't know how many times I have to say, when I'm trying to bring the House to order and everyone is being quiet, that's not the time to interject. You're warned, and I'm going to ask you not to interject for the remainder of question time. So, for the remainder of this answer, interjections, yes, but not the yelling. All the laughing. Yes, whispering would be great. Thank you. The Minister has the call.
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to share with the House. I wasn't intending to comment on the price of any particular model, but the member has really tempted me, and I'm going to take up his offer, Mr. Speaker, because
order.
I'm going to refer. The honourable member asked me about the LDV ET60 electric ute. I'm going to refer him to an article in the Drive newspaper, which says, with a headline, LDV ET60 electric ute now cheaper than its diesel twin, but only in New Zealand. Why is it cheaper in New Zealand but not in Australia, Mr. Speaker? New Zealand has vehicle efficiency standards. Australia does not.
Order. Members on my left, the member for Reid will cease interjecting. Order. The member for Barker, the member for Forrest, when the House comes to order, we'll hear from the member for Lingiari.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for the Environment and Water. How will workers protecting our environment...
Order. No, no. The member for Barker will leave the chamber under 94A. We're getting on so well, but... Order. Everyone needs to remind themselves when a member, no matter who it is asking a question, the respect has to be shown to that member. So out of respect for the member for Lingiari, she shall begin her question.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for the Environment and Water. How will workers protecting our environment benefit from the Albanese Labor government's tax cuts?
Give a call to the Minister for the Environment and Water.
Thanks so much, Mr. Speaker. And the member for Lingiari is a proud Territorian, and I've visited some very beautiful parts of her electorate with her. She's also absolutely committed to seeing the people in Lingiari get a tax cut. She wants to see them earn more and keep more of what they earn, whereas those opposite want to see them work longer for less. In fact, in Lingiari, 43,000 taxpayers will benefit to an average of $1,621 a year.
Member for Longman is warned.
Mr. Speaker, in my portfolio there are many passionate Australians fighting to protect the environment.
The Minister will pause. She's less than 1 minute into her answer. I'm not quite sure because she's been directly relevant to the question, so I hope this isn't a point of order on relevance, because that's fine, but you're entitled to take the point of order. The member for Wentworth has the call.
Okay, thank you. It's point of order on standing order 75, which is irrelevance and tedious repetition. And the point is, I now know how the tax cuts are going to affect almost every constituency in this country and almost every sector of this community. Now, I think these tax cuts are important, but there are many other issues facing this country at the moment, and I think that they deserve to have that airing as well.
The order. The member is entitled to raise a point of order, but just as she is entitled to ask a question of her choice, any member of this parliament is able to ask a question of their choice. And out of respect for the member for Lingiari, she's entitled to ask the question of her choice. The Minister for the Environment and Water has the call.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I really actually thought that the crossbench would be interested in what our hard-working environmental scientists are doing and how they're benefiting. Look, Australians love boating, camping and fishing. They love escaping into nature. We've got a government that will invest in nature and invest to support the people who are caring for nature.
Order.
We've doubled funding for our national parks, and that means in places like Kakadu, Indigenous rangers are able to do things like fix the missing croc warning signs that those opposite didn't replace. And that Indigenous ranger, on $77,000 a year, would get an extra $1,604 a year in their pocket because of our tax cuts. We doubled funding for the Australian Institute of Marine Science, saving 100 jobs in Townsville and growing another 100 jobs. Now, a scientist working there, every single one of those people will get a tax cut. The scientists that were looking after the handfish in Tasmania, taking them out of the Derwent River to protect them from warming waters, that scientist, ecologist, say earning $100,000, will receive a tax cut of $2,179. And I'm very happy to report to the House that the handfish are doing really well after Christmas. Mr. Speaker, a plumber working in Antarctica on expedition down there in some of the harshest environment in the world, a plumber working down there on science, will receive a tax cut of about $3,729 a year on their $156,000 salary. Mr. Speaker, you can count on Labor to invest to protect the environment, because we know that Australians who love their boating, camping and fishing want their natural environment to be there for their kids and their grandkids. And you can count on Labor to stand up for the people who are working to protect our environment.
Give a call to the member for North Sydney.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. Yesterday, myself and others on the crossbench were briefed by the Director of UNRWA in Gaza on the dire humanitarian situation there. He confirmed that unless funds previously committed by countries like Australia are reinstated as a matter of urgency, UNRWA's entire humanitarian operation in Gaza will collapse by the end of March. This will be devastating for the region, ending medical and emergency accommodation services in Gaza, as well as schooling for thousands of refugee children. Mr. Prime Minister, when will the government reinstate the additional $6 million for UNRWA?
Give the call to the Prime Minister.
I thank the member for her question. The government, when we came to office, doubled our funding for UNRWA up to above $20 million. And we have forwarded every single dollar of that doubling of support for the people of largely of Gaza, but of course also the West Bank, to provide that essential humanitarian support. The food and the essentials of life. We are greatly concerned, as has been indicated by the joint statement that I released with the Prime Minister of Canada and the Prime Minister of New Zealand, about their humanitarian situation in Gaza, which is why we have made a very clear statement about that issue. We suspended the additional funding to UNRWA because of, whilst allegations were dealt with about where those dollars potentially were going. And we did so on the basis as like-minded countries did, such as Canada, who have joined with us in calling for a humanitarian ceasefire, in calling for increased support for humanitarian assistance in Gaza. We did that because that is a principled and right thing to do. I do note that in the member's question, as well as other commentary that's been made publicly, It seems to be completely dismissed the fact that we've delivered double the funding that the former government had. Well, it wasn't in the question, the member for North Sydney, at all. And there's a lot of misinformation here is going around. And I'm very concerned about social disharmony in this country as a result of disinformation that is being spread throughout the community. That does nothing to advance the interests of the people of Gaza or the people of the West Bank or the people of Israel. What my statement with the Prime Ministers of Canada and New Zealand made very clear is this government's support for a two-state solution, this government's support for peace and security in the region. We have had the member for Griffith cease and ejecting.
Prime Minister's concluded his answer. The Prime Minister concluded his answer, so there is. You'll need to state the point of order. It's not a time just to get up and state your view. The member for North Sydney has the call and will state the point of order.
Point of order is disrespect.
Resume your seat. The member for Lawler has the call.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Workplace Relations. How is the Albanese Labor government helping Australian men and women earn more and keep more of what they earn after a decade of wage stagnation? And what has been the response?
Give a call to the Minister for Employment, Workplace Relations and the Minister for the Arts.
Thanks very much, Mr. Speaker. And I thank the member for Lawler for the question and for her commitment to getting wages moving in this country. Under the Albanese Labor government, women and men are earning more and keeping more of what they earn. And if you look at the rate at which wages were growing under the decade where low wage growth was a deliberate design feature, the wage price index is now running at roughly double what it was previously, roughly double. Now, there was a moment in the previous life of the previous government where there was a significant closing of the gender pay gap, not down to the levels we've got it to now, but there was one drop where it came down from 14% to 13.4%. And at the time, Senator Cash said this, "We are proud to stand on our record of dramatically reducing the gender pay gap in Australia and of raising workplace standards for women in Australia." What Senator Cash didn't include in the release at that time was the majority reason for the gender pay gap closing was that men's wages had collapsed during the lockdown period of 2020. What we have with the latest closing of the gender pay gap, down to the lowest level it's ever been, is a situation where men's wages have gone up, women's wages have gone up, and the gender pay gap has closed at the same time that inflation has been moderating. And that's exactly what we have in this situation. So with the latest data, with the gender pay gap at its lowest level on record at 12%. I'm surprised there's angry interjections on that point, but maybe I shouldn't be surprised given what Senator Canavan had to say.
Order.
And I do, as the Prime Minister said, single out the fact that the Deputy Leader of the Opposition came out yesterday in a media conference saying, and I quote, "I reject all those comments." And then this morning, in an interview with Patricia Karvelas, asking, "Why do you disagree?" and gave it straight, just said, "Because they're wrong, I'm taking this issue seriously." You would have thought on an issue as important as the gender pay gap, it wouldn't only be the Deputy Leader of the Opposition who was taking the issue seriously and calling out the comments of Senator Canavan. But not one word from the Leader of the Opposition in response to the extraordinary comments from Senator Canavan. We have a situation where the gender pay gap is the lowest it's ever been. Unequivocally, this side of the House says that is a good thing. We have a situation where wages are now growing at roughly double the rate they did under those opposite. And unequivocally, we say that is a good thing.
Order.
We said we would get wages moving. We said we'd lower the gender pay gap. What we said would happen
order.
With wages is occurring, and that is a
concluded.
Good thing.
Just before I call the Deputy Leader of the Opposition, pleased to inform the House that present in the gallery today is a delegation of Malaysian MPs visiting Australia on the Australia-Malaysia Institutional Strengthening Program as guests of the Assistant Foreign Minister, including the head of the delegation, the member for Kota Melaka, Mr. Tuan Ku Pei Cheng, and the member for Jelai, Mr. Zahari Ben Kachi. On behalf of the House, I warmly welcome you. I give the call to the Honourable the Deputy Leader of the Opposition.
My question is to the Minister for Climate Change and Energy, and I refer to the Prime Minister's answer in question time yesterday regarding the new electric version of the RAV4, the Toyota BZ4X. Can the Minister confirm, under this government's new tax on cars and utes, this car is set to sell for $74,900, nearly $35,000 more than the base model of this vehicle sold in Australia today?
Give a call to the Minister for Climate Change and Energy.
Mr. Speaker, what I can confirm is that Australians will have more choices with vehicle efficiency standards, Mr. Speaker. That's what I can confirm.
Order.
And can I say to those members of the National Party?
The Minister will pause. The order. The member will pause. The member for Fairfax is warned. So that means no more interjections. The Minister for Climate Change and Energy has the call.
Mr. Speaker, I say to those members of the National Party and those rural and regional Liberals, perhaps I should listen to their constituents a little more, Mr. Speaker. The Minister for Transport and I received a letter a little while ago. I'm just going to share a few parts of it with the House. My name is Peter Stray. I'm a fifth-generation beef and sheep farmer in the Golden Plains region of Victoria. I'm writing to urge you to make sure...
Member Gippsland.
Thank you for your promise to design and deliver fuel efficiency standards for Australia. You don't want to hear from Peter Stray from Golden Plains in Victoria.
The Minister will pause. The Minister reading a letter out about directly responsibility about the questions about cost and the types of vehicles, I think in anyone's view would be directly relevant. So let's just hope for the best. The Deputy Leader of the Opposition on a point of order.
Mr. Speaker, my point of order is relevant because it was an incredibly tight question.
Resume your seat. And it also included the Prime Minister's answer from yesterday. So it wasn't tight, because if you're referring to subject matter that's been raised in the parliament before, that's going to allow the minister, as I was explaining to the House, and I don't know what's in this letter, I don't know who's written the letter besides Peter, but I want to listen to order. I want to hear to make sure that the letter is being relevant to the question. And the minister has the call.
Thank you. Peter Stray from Sheoaks in the Golden Plains of Victoria wrote to the Minister for Transport and I and said, I'm writing to urge you to make sure our standards are strong and well designed. We need them to be competitive and effective so Australian farmers can get our hands on cleaner utes and cheaper to run utes. Farming is getting harder. Literally, the National Party doesn't care about the views of Peter Stray. Farming is getting harder. With an El Nino declared, we started destocking because I don't want to go through another season wondering if I can feed my animals. We want cleaner, lower emissions farm operations, including our vehicles. But we can't make the business case stack up because the choice of electric and fuel efficient vehicles on the market in Australia is so limited. They're also far too expensive. There are utes being made now. There are utes being made.
Order. Members on my left.
They really don't want to hear. They really don't want to hear, Peter.
Order.
There are utes being made with ranges of around 800 kilometres now. If we can sort out our fuel efficiency standards, those utes will make it to Australia instead of just to the EU and US. I already drive further and pay more for fuel than those in the city, so the cost of living impact is getting increasingly real. Australia is one of the only wealthy countries in the world without a legislated national fuel efficiency standard. If we get our standards right, it will be an incentive for manufacturers to send far more low and zero emissions new vehicles, including farm utes, to Australia. Farmers and regional Australians want stronger fuel efficiency standards. That's from Peter Stray, a farmer, a multi-generational farmer from Golden Plains in Victoria. Why don't you be more like Peter?
Order. We'll hear from the member for Chisholm.
Thank you so much, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Education. What is the Albanese Labor government doing to respond to gender-based violence in our universities?
Call to the Minister for Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and can I thank the sensational member for Chisholm for her question. It's a really important question. I ask members to imagine finishing high school and then moving away from home and going to university. You're living in student accommodation and one night you're assaulted by someone who lives on the same floor as you. You reach out for support from your university and it doesn't come. For the last 10 years, Shana Bremner has been fighting for the rights of students like this. That's what her organisation, End Rape on Campus, does. And she's not alone. Camille Schofield and the team at the Stop Campaign and Renee Carr and the team at Fair Agenda do this too. Supporting survivors and fighting for change on university campuses and in residential colleges. Change that has been a long time coming. 1 in 20 students report being sexually assaulted since they started uni. 1 in 6 report having been sexually harassed. And 1 in 2 students say that they haven't been heard when it happens, that the response hasn't been good enough. This isn't just a problem in our universities. It exists in all workplaces. It exists here at Parliament House. But universities aren't just places where people study or where people work. They're also places where people live, where you could live in the same student accommodation as the person who assaulted you. The University's Accord called this out in their interim report last year as an area where urgent work was needed. And a lot has happened since then. A working group made up of Commonwealth, state and territory governments have come together and agreed to act. And last Friday I announced that we will establish an independent national student ombudsman. It will have the power to investigate complaints, the power to bring parties together to resolve issues, and the power to make recommendations on what actions universities should take. And if universities don't act, the power will be there to hold them to account. As Minister, I will also be responsible to report to the Parliament on the number and types of complaints and the actions that universities take. Mr. Speaker, can I thank the member for Chisholm, who I know has argued for this? Can I thank the many members of the crossbench, both in this House and in the Senate, who have advocated for this? And most importantly, can I thank Shana and Renee and Camille and Dr. Alison Henry and everyone that they represent who have fought for this for years? On the weekend, Shana said that after 50 years of student-led advocacy, we've finally gotten reform. Mr. Speaker, it's coming now because of Shana and people like her.
Just before I call the Prime Minister on the indulgence, the Leader of the Opposition wished to make some remarks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, I want to commend the Minister for the work that he's undertaken and pledge bipartisan support on this very important issue. We've spoken a lot in this place over the years about the incidents, the occurrence of sexual assault in society. We have an absolutely zero tolerance for the sexual assault of any person, but particularly in an environment where students are vulnerable because of the confined living arrangements, as the Minister rightly points out, and the fact that the universities are engaged in a productive way is to their credit, but a lot of work has to happen and quickly, and the Coalition will pledge our support without condition to the Minister in his endeavours in this regard.
And the Prime Minister.
Can I firstly perhaps, Prime Minister, thank the Leader of the Opposition for his comments and for the bipartisan support that I'm sure will come from all members and senators in this House. Can I acknowledge the grassroots movement, as the Minister did, for people who, from my time on campus, have been drawing attention to these issues for many, many decades. Can I congratulate the Minister for actually for acting on this report? It's something that he has brought up in other forums that we don't talk about. You'll find out about in 30 years. But he has been very, very strong on this. The advice is so clear that what has been happening up to now is a real disincentive for women to be able to freely move around our universities and our educational system. And the victims, of course, can have an impact that lasts for the rest of their lives as well. So this is too late, frankly. We all should have done something before now. But those of us who are in a position to advocate important change will do so now as a result of this report. And can I ask that further questions be placed on the notice paper?